Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pop Health Podcast. My name is Gavin Ward, and I'm the host of Pop Health Podcast. And today, I'm up in Northern California, and I'm with some leaders from Stanford Healthcare. I'm very excited today to have with me Christine Thompson, who is a leader for heart conditions, I guess you can say, here at Stanford Healthcare. And then we have also Dr. Deep Banerjee, who's a leader in that department as well. Let's go ahead and start with Christine. First of all, thanks so much for joining us today, Christine.
Thank you for inviting us. I'm pleased to be here.
You're very welcome. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background, Christine? I know you've done some work at other organizations in the past as well. Maybe how you got into healthcare, and also maybe a fun fact. Let's start with that, actually. What's something folks may not know about you?
I like foreign language. I studied language in school, and before I became a nurse, I actually worked for National Geographic in Washington, D.C.
National Geographic in D.C. Okay, really quickly, you got to tell me a brief highlight from that.
Well, I got to, excuse me, I worked in the Clippings Library and helped work with the editors on stories for the magazine and also on some books. And one time when I was working there, Robert Redford walked in with an idea for a story called The Outlaw Trail, which indeed was written and published.
Wow, Robert Redford. Cool. I know I have some folks in my life who would love to have met him. So very cool. And Dr. Deep Banerjee, can you tell us a little bit about your background? But before that, actually, maybe a fun fact about you. Actually, I know I saw a picture out in front. You have a little one in your life?
Yeah, I have a 2-year-old son. He is a lot of fun. Another fun fact, I guess, would be that in college I was the coxswain of my crew team, and we took second place at the head of the Charles. And I almost became a black belt in Taekwondo, but not quite.
Okay. Is that something you're still working on? Or
when in between clinic visits.
Okay. Very good. I know doctors usually have lots of free time.
Absolutely.
Very good. Well, Christine, can you tell us how you ended up here at Stanford?
Actually, I was a patient at Stanford back in the day. I was a pediatric patient.
Okay. Wow.
I had a surgery here, and also had my daughter here. So Stanford feels like home. I grew up in Palo Alto. I'm originally from Texas, but grew up in Palo Alto, and while growing up was involved in the Red Cross scouting. I was a volunteer camp counselor for 2 years during high school. For less fortunate children, I planned all their activities. So working with people and the sciences were great interests of mine, so healthcare seemed like a good fit.
Okay, very good. And so you're kind of a native to the Northern California area, and do you think in the future, is this a place you'll probably spend the rest of your life at?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, very good. And Dr. Banerjee, how did you end up here at Stanford?
Well, actually, I was born in the Midwest in St. Louis, so I'm a diehard Cardinals fan.
Ah.
But I went to college on the East Coast, and then I did my medical school in Missouri.
Okay.
After medical school, I matched at Stanford for my internship and residency, and I've been here ever since for all of my training and all my practice in cardiology and beyond.
Okay, well, I know for both of us this year, baseball probably wasn't the best.
Could have been better.
Yeah.
The Royals are okay.
The Royals just won the World Series. That's pretty good. I'm a Dodger fan, and the Cardinals usually have our number. But this year, the Cubs, they came out of nowhere.
Right.
So let's go ahead and talk a little bit more about your current role at Stanford. We'll go with you, Christine. Tell us a little bit more about your role here at Stanford, what you're involved with, and what do you think you guys are doing really well for, and please touch on your readmission rate as well.
I'd be happy to, Gavin. I'm a clinical nurse specialist, which is an advanced practice role, and my clinical background has been critical care with emphasis on cardiovascular nursing.
Okay.
So I've always been attracted to it. I took ECG classes before I even took nursing school, so I knew where I was headed pretty much, I would say. I am fortunate to be in this role because it feels like an opportunity to use my experience and skills I've acquired over the years in one role. So it's been intensely enjoyable and satisfying, and especially the opportunity I've been given to work with Dr. Banerjee and the team to really impact patient care in our reduction of readmissions. We really created quite a structure that's serving as the model for care transitions for the rest of the hospital.
Yeah, I've been pretty impressed. I've been fortunate enough to sit in on some of the community roundtables that you do focused on cardiovascular health. And can you touch on your readmission rate with the patient population that you oversee and share with us a little bit about how you've been able to have so much success?
Certainly. We were the fortunate recipients of a grant from the Moore Foundation when we embarked upon our readmissions reduction project back in 2012. At that time, our 30-day readmissions for heart failure were pretty much in line with the national average. Ours was 20%. I believe the national average was projected at 24% for 30-day all-cause readmissions. So these are readmissions for any cause, not necessarily coming back again with symptoms of heart failure exacerbation. In the work that Dr. Banerjee and I and our administrative director, Charlene Kell, we served as a triad at sort of the planning group. We brought in many people across the organization, multidisciplinary team, multidisciplinary representatives from dietary, physical therapy, care coordination, social work, to work in work groups to address interventions that we thought, well, that were shown in the evidence to impact readmissions. And these are things like enhanced education using TeachBack, discharge clinic appointments, follow-up appointments made prior to the patient's departure from the hospital so they're not burdened with that duty and that it would be timely, hopefully within 7 days in most cases. And that included not only the primary care physician and the cardiologist, so they would be tied into both. We also have included in that were discharge follow-up phone calls. And our data showed that they, amongst the bundle of interventions, had quite an impact. We actually presented on that at the Heart Failure Society in 2014.
Okay.
And the other intervention is enhanced medication reconciliation and education, which is very important. We were finding discrepancies sometimes in what the patient went home with in a medication list and what we really thought they were going to go home with. And really recognizing that patients need information in plain language.
Absolutely.
And support for management of their medications.
Yeah, and I like what you said about plain language. I was actually at a forum yesterday with the Providence Health and Services down in Southern California organization, St. John's Health Center. And we had groups from UCLA, Kaiser, other local areas, and the big theme down there was simplicity and just common language for patients so they can be compliant. So I really like what you just said there. Dr. Banerjee, can you share a little bit about your work since your time here at Stanford and where you guys are having some success and maybe even some challenges that you're seeing as well?
Sure. So when I started at Stanford, I was mostly focused on heart failure, and I have special advanced training in heart failure. For that reason, half of my role is being the medical director of the mechanical circulatory support program that helps put pumps in patients who have severe heart failure. But the other end of the spectrum, and I think which is equally rewarding, is helping to help prevent heart failure readmissions, as Christine mentioned. And I think that what's been really rewarding above and beyond, I think, just regular clinical care has been the team-based approach that we have. Christine already mentioned this triad of myself, Christine, and Charlene Kell. I think traditionally people have thought of medicine as top-down and particularly clinical care as there's one person who oversees everything. But we've really learned, I think, over the past 3 years that that's not the best way necessarily to deliver care, particularly when you have something as complicated as discharge planning and reducing readmissions. There's so many moving parts, it's impossible for one person to oversee all of that. And I think it does a disservice to all the providers in the hospital, like the dietitians, the pharmacists, our nurses in the clinic, not to allow them the responsibility and the role in terms of reducing readmissions for these patients. I think the other thing that we do, this is Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And I have been very proud that we have leveraged technology to improve readmissions. I think that's something that we probably do better than any program in the country. We have a great clinical informatics team, and they've helped us create this dashboard that we look at every day that encapsulates all of our patients who have a diagnosis of heart failure in the hospital, whether they were readmitted, when they were readmitted, who discharged them from the hospital, and whether they received any of our interventions. That has been phenomenal in helping us to hone in on gaps in our care and further reduce readmissions.
And was that system developed from the ground up here at Stanford, or did you have a model that you kind of looked at?
I think that, again, that's something that we are very fortunate at Stanford to have leadership that supported from the ground level, building this program with clinical input. A lot of places have great informatics teams, but not every place has an informatics team that's willing to sit down with the clinicians and listen to what they need. Because they did listen to us and they collaborated with us, we have a great system that is clinically relevant and useful.
Very good. I'm sure folks listening in may want to reach out and learn more about that. I know it's a challenge that not everyone solved, and it seems like you guys have done a pretty good job. Christine, can you tell us a little bit about the post-acute community that you work with? I know some of your collaborations or community roundtables, there's folks from home health, SNF, maybe private duty home care as well. Tell us about that.
I'd be happy to. First of all, organizationally, we have quarterly meetings chaired by our Director for Care Coordination, Tim Morrison.
Okay, yeah.
And Karen Nelson. And they bring our community partners, if you will, to the table.
Right.
Including skilled nursing and home health. Home care services, I should say, because the spectrum is growing in terms of what's being offered now to support patients in the home.
Right.
In addition to that, our heart failure program has been chairing monthly meetings, hosting monthly meetings with community partners again, and that also includes not only our own in-house aging adult services, the multidisciplinary team, social work, case management, pharmacy, physician. Our physician champion usually attends, Dr. Banerjee.
Yep.
And nurses from the units, the frontline nurses, in which we can share data. We have problem solved many gaps in care in terms of patient transitions. We've developed the packet for patients going to skilled nursing, going to home care, so that everything is very clear in terms of patients being assessed at high risk or not, patients' medications, and sharing our tools. We've also done outreach to skilled nursing. I personally have gone to a number of skilled nursing facilities and provided teaching for their staff, education on the care of the heart failure patient, how to assess the heart failure patient, and also tips for educating, because skilled nursing is now taking this on, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's great that you're able to go out to the community and do some of that teaching. It's really neat, the infrastructure you all have here. We have community support, and you're able to go out and support the community yourselves. It's really neat. Dr. Banerjee, how are physicians that you interact with, how are they dealing with the changes we see in healthcare over the years and a big focus on readmissions? Can you tell us about just your experience as a physician in readmission prevention?
I think it's a big shift, because traditionally we've thought of healthcare as hospital-based, and the care happens in the hospital, and no one really knows what happens to the patient after they leave. So it's definitely a shift in philosophy for physicians to think, well, what is happening to my patient at home? And it's essentially a black box, because we don't know. And what has happened is that that shift has allowed us to change the way that we deliver care on an outpatient basis and try to marry inpatient and outpatient care. So a big focus in the last few years has been on transitions of care.
Right.
We know our patients so well in the hospital, and we know them in clinic. We have a huge gap about what happens to them in between. Christine already mentioned that she's trying to fill in that gap by calling every single patient that gets discharged from Stanford that goes to a nursing facility, so that the nursing facility knows what the medications are and they don't feel bereft of guidance, because the patient that was in the hospital for 28 days, they're most well known by the inpatient team. So I think physicians are gradually coming around to this idea, but it's not just a single physician that can affect this change. It's going to have to be an organizational change. And so what I've really seen is hospitals taking this leadership role or this interest in transitions of care, and that's what's really going to move the needle in terms of how we care for our patients.
Very good. So transitions of care, are there any models that Stanford, and this could be for either of you, have modeled your programs after? Christine, maybe?
Well, we've kind of a lot of our interventions, which are evidence-based, came from the Eric Holman care transitions model. And in addition, Mary Naylor, who's a PhD nurse at UPenn, has authored and led a number of studies about the outreach to home, especially with her focus happened to be geriatric patients by and large. But the lessons learned actually do apply to all of our patients. So we're appreciating more and more that a touch in the home can be very powerful, especially for our patients who are vulnerable.
Yeah, I'm familiar with both those models. I know advanced practice nurses and the Naylor model are definitely successful. I understand here at Stanford you have advanced practice nurses helping do the follow-ups as well. Is that correct?
Well, we do. We have a shared visit model in clinic where a physician and a CNS see a patient in the same visit. The CNS can, at that point, review patient's symptoms at home, what's been going on, and actually delve into re-education of the patient and caregiver who may not have been present during the hospitalization to take advantage of the teaching.
That's great that you're able to touch the caregiver as well, who may not, like you said, may not have been in the initial stay. One thing we see big issues with my professional career is from in the home care space is just patient compliance. And I wanted to see if you all had any advice or funny story or anything like that. How can you convince your patients to be compliant? How are you seeing success?
Well, I think that it starts with education. And so, as Christine mentioned, one of the most important interventions that we have is the education that our heart failure nurse specialists, but also the bedside nurses, give to our patients during their admission. That's something that's reinforced not only as an inpatient, but as an outpatient. You mentioned simplicity. I think that it's so important to put the teaching in the patient's own words and own language. So Christine and her team have done a great job of translating all of our heart failure materials into different languages, such as Tagalog, Mandarin, and I think even Samoan, if I'm not mistaken, which I can't even comprehend. So, we talked a lot about how it's with this team-based model, it's important to give responsibility to everyone who's touching the patient, but we can't forget the responsibility of the patient. And I think we often underappreciate how intelligent our patients really are, and we sort of teach above them but not really to them.
Yep.
And for that reason, I think that's another thing that Stanford does very well, particularly in our clinics. Sodium restriction teaching is, I think, bar none, and we spend at least 45 minutes on the initial visit with our patients to really drill into them what it means to follow a strict no added salt diet. But I look at it as heart failure, living with heart failure is a lifelong problem. And so it's a lifelong education. And the inpatient hospitalization may be the first class that you have, but every visit, every time you touch that patient, it's another class. So it's almost like hopefully by the end you've graduated and you have a PhD in heart failure.
Very good. Any words from you, Christine,
about
compliance?
Right. And if I may, I have come to understand that compliance is not a very nice word. It's a bit judgmental.
Mm. Okay.
So we encourage our staff to use the word adherence. And I use compliance, too, in my long years of nursing. It becomes almost a label. We don't want to say, he or she is noncompliant. It is about adherence. And the difference is that adherence implies that the patient understands what the plan is about and chooses either to engage or not engage. And so it's respecting the patient's autonomy, whereas compliance is more like, I've made this plan for you, you need to follow it.
Yeah, good point.
So in terms of dealing with patients that are have difficulty adhering to strategies for self-care, my belief is that we need to meet them where they are. There may be cultural reasons why they are not adherent a lot of the time to, say, dietary things. And so sometimes we can't expect a patient to go home and immediately go from 3,000 or 3,500 milligrams of sodium per day to 2,000 or less. We may have successes by incremental change. I mean, we certainly emphasize what the goal is and why the goal is.
Yeah.
But adherence and fostering adherence and patient education is all about empowering the patient and putting them in the driver's seat. We've had a model for years that didn't do that. We're now seeing the value of that. But at the same time, we're there and available to support the patient.
We're like the GPS.
Yeah, very good. Like what you said about the driver's seat, I believe you've seen, I may have been at a conference with you, Christine, where Dr. Coleman spoke, and he does a visual with the driver's seat. I'm not sure if you're there, but and so when you mention that, I do picture that, and that's really helped me understand where patients need to be and not just directed and meet them where they are, as you have said. As we near the end of our discussion, if there was one key point, if you had a family member or a friend and say, hey, what do you guys do? How are you helping Stanford and the patient population? And just like a 30-second snippet, how are you helping Stanford Healthcare and their patients get better? In a 30-second Cliff Note takeaway version for our audience. I know we've talked a lot of detail.
I think that we're basically helping patients help themselves. That's how we separate ourselves, perhaps, from other healthcare systems. We really, as Christine mentioned, empower the patients and give them the tools that they need to navigate their lives with this difficult and this difficult illness of heart failure. And the tools that we give them are, I think, are part of the support, but we're always there to help them either solidify their understanding of heart failure or gain new understanding over time.
Yeah. Like what you said, help them help themselves. How about you, Christine? Take away.
I would agree with Dr. Banerjee. And it's more about, more than just teaching the what, it's the why and the how to take action. And that's one of the great tools that we were able to develop based on the IHA model of the rainbow chart. But helping patients identify when X happens, when I get more short of breath or my legs swell up or my weight pops up 5 pounds in 2 days, what do I do? So it's making sure they leave the hospital with numbers and point people to call, including ourselves, the nursing team. They know they can call us. And
very good. Well, Christine, Dr. Banerjee, I appreciate you very much for taking a few minutes with us on Pop Health Podcast.
Can I add one more thing?
Sure, Gavin? Christine. Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't give you the punchline that we were able to reduce our 30-day readmissions by 50%. We went from 20% to 10%. And we were able to sustain that in the last fiscal year, for fiscal year 2015, which ended August 31st. So,
and now we're seeking to reduce 90-day readmissions.
Right.
Excellent. So from a 30-day rate from 20 to 10, now with a focus on 90-day readmissions.
The journey continues.
Absolutely. And it will probably never end. We'll really appreciate you, Dr. Banerjee and Christine Thompson, for spending a few minutes with us today. And my takeaway is help patients help themselves. Really good message. So thanks, everybody. And stay tuned for the next episode of Pop Health Podcast. Thanks, everybody. Take care.